information as well. With that said, I want to thank you for your time and the opportunity to come and speak with you. And I also want to say that one of the most important things that we can do as a community is build our future leaders. And we have so many talented leaders in our community. You probably see me way too much, but I would love to help any and all of you make sure that there are some fabulous Native Americans appointed to other boards and commissions, because one of the strengths and assets we have are a lot of really strong leaders. So I'm happy to help in that effort. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
That was fantastic. Thank you. I do know, Nicole and the entire team are indeed very persistent, and they've never actually chased me down the sidewalk. But they would if they had to, I'm sure. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for bringing forward that presentation, and thank all of you for your time here at City Council. We really are honored by your presence. We have a contract. We've got a couple of contracts. I was just given a note that on 1069, there are people here who have to catch a plane at 3:30 that have been waiting all day. And if I could do that quickly, then we'll move to housing issues and go from there. Carla, could you please read the council calendar title for item 1069?
Mm-hmm. Authorize a contract for $768,740 with IXP Corporation for radio system planning project consulting services.
Good afternoon, and thank you all for waiting and for your patience.
Christine Moody, Bureau of Purchases. Before you is an ordinance recommending authorization of a contract with IXP Corporation for radio system planning project consulting services in the amount of $768,740 as part of the public safety system revitalization project. Earlier this year, a request for proposals was issued and 11 responses were received. An evaluation committee made up of 6 evaluators, 2 city staff, 1 community member, and 3 people representing the Regional Radio System Partnership selected IXP as the most qualified respondent, receiving the highest evaluation score. This contract is being administered by the City of Portland on behalf of the Regional Radio System Partnership, and the project is being funded by the Public Safety Interoperable Communications Grant. I will turn this back over to council if there are any questions regarding the selection process.
Any questions from council regarding the selection process? All right. Anything you want to add?
I'm Lisa Vasquez. I'm the Public Safety System Revitalization Project Office Manager for the City of Portland. And I just wanted to point out that IXP Corporation has come today, just in case you have any questions of them. Their executive staff is present, one from the East Coast, one locally. And if you have any other questions, we have city staff that can answer them. This is 100% grant eligible, refundable.
Okay. Questions from council? Does anyone in the room wish to testify on emergency ordinance item 1069? Carla, would you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
As commissioner in charge of the 911, I want to thank Commissioner Leonard for his leadership on the Public Safety System Revitalization Project. Aye.
Thank you.
Fish?
I want to reassure you that the weather we're experiencing is an anomaly, but you may want to come back in September to experience the better side of our weather. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1069 is approved. Can you please read council calendar items 1072 and 1073, emergency ordinances?
Mayor, it's my great pleasure to introduce, I think for the first time officially, Margaret Van Vliet, who is the new director of the new Portland Housing Bureau. As you know, she was selected at the conclusion of a competitive process, and she was our top candidate. And fortunately for the city, she accepted our offer, and she has not revoked it yet. So that's a double blessing. We have a couple of milestones we've celebrated. We have officially launched the new Portland Housing Bureau as of July 1st. Margaret has been hired and is seizing the reins. In mid-September, we'll be inviting you each to come to a ribbon cutting at our new space. and we are in the process of moving towards consolidation, but we're at a phase what we call co-location now. I won't bore you with Margaret's background, but we're just very fortunate to have her. I understand she's had a chance to meet with all of you privately, which was one of her first priorities. And I'm delighted to welcome Margaret Van Vliet, the new director of the Portland Housing Bureau. Margaret?
And Ms. Van Vliet, if I could impose upon you a minute. Carla, can you please read the title for these two items, and then we'll move forward. Thank you, Commissioner Fish.
1072, authorized subrecipient contract with Portland Development Commission in the amount of $6,288,325 for affordable rental housing development and provide for payment. 1073, authorized intergovernmental agreement between Portland Development Commission and the Portland Housing Bureau for housing coordination and transition.
Ms. Bembley.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Thank you, Commissioner Fish, and other members of the council. I'm very happy to be here, glad to be able to bring you two pretty straightforward items, but they are important milestones in our migration towards a fully integrated new Portland Housing Bureau. I also want to just take a quick second and thank the folks who provided interim leadership at PDC Housing and the former BHCD. They've had a long transition period and really had things in good shape as I have stepped in just this month to take over. I'm going to provide you a quick update on our migration and merger activities before I speak to a couple of the particulars in the two items. First of all, I want to just say that we are working hard on developing a new charge for the new Bureau, kind of a mission and a refreshed framework for the work we do. We want that framework to include a continuum of housing that serves people who are unhoused all the way to home ownership. And we want to do that in a way that looks at the larger picture of the total housing market. So it's one of my hopes that we can set ourselves up to do that well. Another big priority is to clarify our policy intent. We operate under multiple policies, and sometimes they're in conflict with each other. And so that's part of what we're kind of examining right now. Always we want to make wise use of our public funds and have a keen eye on sort of our public accountability and responsibilities. And mostly we want to focus on outcomes. We want to focus on outcomes that reflect the values of Portlanders and that you set as our leaders, about what it means for folks to be stable in their homes, to find housing that's affordable for their circumstance and that's connected in ways that help make their lives better. So we're doing this work of reframing and refreshing our mission by engaging employees and stakeholders and others who aren't our stakeholders yet. And we're getting some help from an excellent national consulting firm to help us think about some new ideas and new ways of doing this. So that's proceeding as planned. And I'm hopeful that within a month, Commissioner Fish and I will have a new design, at least framework, to adopt, and then we'll move forward with that. Next steps, as the commissioner mentioned, we're moving into our new space in the fall. That'll be our co-location phase. The legal sort of full migration and full integration will happen next July 1st. But I'm very clear that true organizational change and bringing these two pretty different cultures together is going to take a lot of time. So one of the things I'm spending a lot of time on right now is understanding those two cultures and thinking and learning from the folks who've been working there a long time and how to bring them along. And I can see that the true integration and really getting to the outcomes consistently that I think we're going to look for can take 1, 3, and 5 years. I think there are windows of time, and I'm hoping to be able to come back and talk to you about my hopes for what we could achieve after the first year, what we can achieve after a couple more years, and so on. So we'll be back with updates, and I'm pleased to be here, and I thank you for your warm welcomes. So with that, I just will quickly mention a couple of things about item 1072. This is our subrecipient contract between the city and the Portland Development Commission. This is an agreement that's actually been in place in similar form for a number of years. We use this agreement to pass through federal and local funds, but mostly federal funds, from the city to the PDC, and they use those funds to invest in housing projects that meet established city housing goals. We do this because, as you know, PDC has the expertise and a capacity to underwrite and structure and make loans and grants to developers and nonprofits, very often, most often, leveraging private capital. PDC then reports back to the city on their use of those funds, and we have a shared process for formally selecting projects and processes that get funded. A few of our priorities this year inside this contract are around preservation of affordable housing, development of the Resource Access Center, engagement in the Federal Base Realignment Program, housing for veterans, and a continued focus on homeownership and foreclosure prevention. I should note just finally that the PDC's commission has looked at this and accepted it, and I think it is ready for your approval. I'd be happy to answer any questions or ask my staff to help answer questions.
Council discussion on 1072. Anyone in the room wish to testify on council calendar item emergency ordinance 1072? Carl? Sure.
Do I stay here?
Okay. Yes, sir. Please give us your name and you'll have...
It's Barry Joe Stahl. I attended both Commissioner Fish and Fritz's town hall Tuesday. What was it, the 21st last week? And we have a housing crisis in Portland, obviously. I currently am in Transition Projects Incorporated because of my housing issues. And yesterday I had a meeting with my caseworker, which is the first opportunity that I had. And I was told that coming into the shelter and testing positive for THC, that I was okay for the first 29 days, but if I test positive for THC after 30 days, then I'm excluded from the housing program. The problem is...
THC, the active ingredient in marijuana?
The test is actually for metabolites. So the problem is it's like if we can... say, here's some ashes, there was a fire, and there was some wood here before. Right. The ashes are evidence, but they're not the heat, they're not the wood. They're just a way to tell that there was a fire there, right? Your deference as a firefighter. And so the issue is, because these things are...
I actually understand other kinds of analogies besides fires.
Right. So what it is, the problem...
So I want to make sure you have a chance to make your point.
Yes. So the problem is these metabolites, right, that they test for are fat soluble, so they're in the human body and released slowly. And so a test up to a month later, you could test positive.
So you for the use about 3 weeks ago, and you showed positive.
And you could still test positive, right? So their policy at Transition Projects, which I might also inform you that the city provided about $250,000 under the SAFE, the SAFE Access Street, whatever the SAFE program is. That's one of your clients. That's somebody that you as the city council and we as the city of Portland are funding. Their policy is when an individual comes in, anybody, and they test positive for THC, that's evidence that they used marijuana sometime, day before, maybe a month before. So 30 days later, they figure these processes of eliminating this,
right,
have completed, and then that means that at some time as under your client history, you violated their drug and alcohol policy. So their policy is, since marijuana is illegal under federal law, that you can't test positive for THC, and if you are a medical marijuana patient under Oregon's Department of Human Services medical marijuana program, that you use Marinol, which in my case would probably cost about $1,000 a month. Well, that's a housing budget right there for a number of individuals, I would hope. So the concern that I think that you all should be aware of is that under Oregon law, we do have the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, but there doesn't seem to be housing that's available for medical marijuana patients under these programs. Now I know, Mayor Adams, you did recognize May as Medical Marijuana Awareness Month,
right,
so that you know that there is this potential for this medicinal. But what do we do as patients to ensure that we have access to housing?
So the mayor has assigned that question to the Housing Bureau, and we'll get back to you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted that to be on your radar. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Still. All right. Anyone else wish to testify on council calendar? Item Emergency Ordinance 1072. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, Mr. Still mentioned about the town halls that Commissioner Fish and I heard a lot of testimony about the urgency of housing needs, and I'm sure I know you're well aware of it. So I wanted to point out that this contract is for over $6 million, and included in that is $1.4 million of general fund, which this council approved and supports and wants to do more. So thank you for all your work on that, and I vote aye.
Fish.
And just building on that point, Commissioner Fritz, I think we can all take some pride that in the toughest budget that we'll hopefully have to address in a long time, the city, under the mayor's leadership, allocated 30% additional funds above the base budget to cover the social safety net and housing programs for people who, for whom the market does not serve. So that is quite a milestone. Aye.
Adams.
I'll save my comments to the next item. Aye. 1072 is approved. Any reason why we should not support 1073?
No.
Is there any questions from the City Council on Emergency Ordinance Council Calendar Item 1073?
I will just note, Mayor, that a tremendous amount of work went in. This is an IGA. The issues are mind-numbing,
they are.
To say the least. A tremendous amount of work, and it's further complicated by the fact that we are going to go through this period of co-location with some different legal entities operating as we're creating the one team. So I just want to acknowledge the tremendous amount of hard work that went into hammering this out.
Thank you, Commissioner. Anyone wish to testify on 1073? Carl, would you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish and Kate Allen from your office, for keeping my staff informed and inviting us to the housing stakeholder groups. I'm looking forward to working with you and with new director Margaret Van Vliet, and we are all committed to providing more affordable housing, and you're doing excellent work on this. Aye.
Fish.
Welcome again to the city, and you've had a wonderful start, and we have a lot of work to do, and I could not be prouder of your hire and of the work we're going to do together. Aye.
Well, Commissioner Fish, you and your team make this look easy. It is actually incredibly difficult, mind-numbing legal, labor, practical space issues that, you know, can produce great amount of frustration. So thank you for your great leadership on this, Ms. Van Vliet. Welcome. Very impressive start. And I look forward to supporting efforts in the future. Aye. 1073 is approved. That gets us back to, can you please read the titles for emergency ordinances 1061, 1062, 1063, 1064, all relating to the same issue, support and streetcar operations.
1061, amend contract with the Portland Streetcar, Inc. for Portland Streetcar Operations Assistance Services. 1062, amend contract with Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon to fund the operation and maintenance of the Portland streetcar system. 1063, amend contract with the Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon for certain contract employees to work for Portland streetcar. And 1064, amend contract with the Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon to provide other services as needed by the city for the operation and maintenance of the Portland streetcar.
Mr. Jones.
I'm Greg Jones with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. We have four ordinances here for you. These are one-year amendments to the existing contracts to extend the funding, operating, and management services for the Portland streetcar project. These are three agreements with TriMet that provides for TriMet's share of the funding for the streetcar project. personnel agreement to provide for operators and mechanics through TriMet for the streetcar, and a services agreement to provide for maintenance of the overhead catenary system, wheel truing, and other equipment that TriMet has but we don't have as part of the Portland Streetcar system. And finally, the Portland Streetcar Inc. Agreement to provide for management services for the remainder of the year for the project. And it is the intention of the Office of Transportation and TriMet to begin, and Portland Streetcar Inc., to begin negotiating for the future model for Portland Streetcar as we grow with the East Side Streetcar Project in this interim year. So that's why we're asking for this one-year amendment to the existing agreements that originally began back in 95 was the earliest one, and then the TriMet agreements were in 2001.
So year's extension. In the meantime, we're looking at sort of a deep review of our relationship with TriMet relating to streetcars.
Correct.
Questions from council? Does anyone wish to testify on items 1061 through 1064?
We have three people who signed up. Barry Jo Stoll, Mary Saunders, and Gilly Burlingham. Come on up.
Would you like to? Okay.
Mr. Stoll.
Barry Jo Stoll. I was at the, I was a spectator, as I am today for the most part, for the community involvement, engagement committee, involvement, I suppose it was, committee for the, regarding the Portland plan. And one of the things that came out was that the streetcar concept plan is out. And reverting back to one of my campaign issues back in 2000 was that I saw electric buses as an alternative to the fixed rails in the streets. They have electric buses in the city of Seattle. And the idea is, of course, that once you put in rails, you create issues with the actual flow of traffic, the use of traffic, where on the other hand, a trolley on the top of an electric bus is just something that connects to an overhead line that can be relocated or moved as experience merits, and rather than having, as we've seen, the massive job to establish the Green Line Max here in town, and the construction disruption and the impact on businesses, I think that a better approach, and one that should be considered, is the use of electric trolley buses rather than the fixed rails in the street, which also are a great hazard to bicyclists.
Thank you, Mr. Stoll.
Gilly Burlingham. Yes, I have to admit that I wasn't aware. I was so involved in Bull Run that I didn't even know this was coming up. I love streetcars. I even worked for the National City Lines during the Second World War, and they ran the Baltimore and the Los Angeles line. I, too, agree that it would be wonderful if instead of having the fixed rail, we could have the overhead, because it would mean that it could be transferred to different streets and different routes. I would also like to put a plug in for those of us, like my daughter and myself, who do not have a car here. We really need a bus running somewhere north and south between 39th and 12th. But thank that you. Has nothing to do with what we're talking about right at the moment. No. Just thought I'd bring it in.
Well, thank you both very much. Appreciate it. Carla, would you please call the roll?
We need Commissioner Fish.
Okay. Can you read the title? We'll put that on hold. Can you read the title to the non-emergency ordinance, council calendar item 1065?
Accept a grant agreement in the amount of $1,639,677 from the Oregon Department of Transportation for the US 26 Adaptive Signal System Project to optimize traffic signal timing along US 26 from Southeast Milwaukee Avenue to Southeast 52nd Avenue.
All right, you two, don't go anywhere. Can you please call the roll on council calendar at emergency ordinance 1061?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1061 is approved. Can you please read the title for, or please call the roll on emergency ordinance 1062?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1062 is approved. Can you please call the roll on council calendar item emergency ordinance 1063?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1063 is approved. Can you please read the, call the roll on emergency ordinance council calendar item 1064?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Thanks. Really appreciate everyone's good work on those. So this is a grant agreement with from ODOT where we get money to work on a project that will help us in a variety of different ways. What is the most important benefit of this council calendar item?
The most important benefit is that we will reduce travel time across the Powell Boulevard run from about 82nd to
It's east of Rosa.
McLaughlin, right. Sorry. Oh, my name is Richard Johnson. I represent Portland Bureau of Transportation.
And my name is Will Rotich, representing Portland Bureau of Transportation.
So in any case, this is an advanced traffic management system that will actually modify the signal timing in real time based on travel demand. Currently, we have traffic signal plans in place that are based on engineers have gone out and taken a look at it and said, okay, this is the average amount of demand at this time of day, and we implement that plan. Well, this system will actually look at real-time detection, see what the real demand is, and adjust it literally second by second. So we will get a reduced amount of carbon output. We will get an increased transportation flow through that system. So that's what this is to do.
Yeah, and long gone are the days that we just turned the light green, yellow and red. We actually turn the light green, and then we actually look at the traffic that is on that leg, and we kind of adjust it accordingly so that we can either increase the green time or reduce the green time. And we actually count the traffic at the same time, and we report back to what is going on. So this is really going to be very, very helpful for us.
So this is the most advanced traffic signalization one could hope for.
This is state of the art. I mean, things have changed since, 20 years ago. I mean, we used to just turn light yellow, red, yellow and green, but now we do a lot of features that we can actually count the traffic and adjust the green times. Now we leave the reds and the yellow alone. We don't mess with those.
Oh, that's a smart man. Well, I really appreciate you your patience in sitting through the day. And is there any discussion from council on this? Thank you for your great work in the Bureau of Transportation. We really appreciate it. Does anyone wish to testify on 1065? It's a non-emergency ordinance. If not, it moves to second reading next week. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay.
Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance council calendar item 1066?
Pay claim of Randall Cooley.
Good afternoon.
Mark Sterker, Risk Management Services. Before you is an ordinance for approval of $78,500 to resolve the litigation of Randall Cooley against the city and the Portland Police Bureau. Last month, in lieu of a trial, we did a mediation with a federal magistrate. And at that mediation, we agreed to resolve the claim for that sum pending City Council approval. Discovery in the litigation has been extensive, involving myself and Mr. Bill Manlove, city attorney, and we have determined that this is in the city's best interest. Any questions or comments?
Questions?
I don't have a question, and I certainly recognize how busy everybody is, but I'm reluctant to vote on something like this without at least getting a briefing as to the particulars of the case. Maybe my colleagues have had that. This is a substantial sum of money. The allegations are, I want to use the right word, concerning. And the implication of this would indicate to one that maybe the council needs to consider some broader kinds of structural approaches in police training. I'm trying to be careful how I say this. I personally can't support this at this point without better understanding the facts of the case. And I should have probably, and this is not your fault, this is not addressed to you, and I probably should have said this the last time we had one of these, but I used to ask for and receive a briefing by the police chief on every one of these. That stopped a year ago, not at my request, but unilaterally. And I think there's been enough cooling off time between then and now that I have to insist to have briefings on these kinds of settlements. And I want to be clear, I don't want to know about fender benders and, mm-hmm. you know, somebody ran a red light and hit somebody and that's our fault, but where it involves police action where a citizen's been injured and where there are allegations of civil rights being violated, I do believe it's the council's responsibility to thoroughly understand the facts of that case. I actually would prefer to do it in public session. I'm not so much comfortable doing it one-on-one as I used to allow to happen mm-hmm. in a coffee shop across the street with the police chief. Mayor, I don't know how you feel about that.
Can we set this over for 2 weeks?
Yes, we can.
Unless there's council objection.
I'm not so much saying set it over. I guess I'm asking you how you feel about in these kinds of cases as opposed to the policy that existed up to a year ago where we had private one-on-one briefings. I mm-hmm. think the public deserves to know. The council certainly deserves to know. And we should have a public discussion as to the facts of the case. And I'm not looking for some kind of an inquest, or I'm not looking for any opportunity to embarrass any particular police officer or the bureau or certainly the commissioner in charge. But I've always taken these seriously, and if you'll recall, mm-hmm. because of circumstances a year ago, I've allowed my prior mm-hmm. practice of insisting on being briefed on each of these to lapse. I think that grace period has ended. I'm no longer going to ask for a private briefing. I would like to know how my colleagues feel about having that happen here. I would also like to request that that happen here and that we vote at the next session. So I'm not actually asked to vote on it that day, but rather hear what the issues are, mm-hmm. allow people to say what they want to say, and give me a week to think about it.
I think it's very useful, and that's why if we could, how would we do that? I was thinking we would set it over for 2 weeks in the intervening week. We actually would need to set it over for a week and then set it over again, I think. Is that how it works?
I would also like...
Are you talking about the specific one or Commissioner Leonard's proposal?
Well, I guess
this specific one, and then it would establish a practice from council.
I'm more of a policy, and I want to be real clear. I'm not asking for those kinds of typical fender bender ones we get rather routinely where it's truly an accident. But the ones that come fairly consistently where there's allegations of either police brutality or unlawful detention, or certainly where we have a man whose wrist was broken, I would like to have a forum in which those folks that we're settling with have an opportunity to explain their side, the police bureau has an opportunity to explain its side, because I'm not comfortable just paying somebody off for something that may have happened that violates city policy, that may indicate a need for additional training. It feels a little bit like we're sweeping it under the rug, and I voted for one like this a week or two ago, mm-hmm. and I regretted not mm-hmm. saying that then. And, again, don't mean to put you on the spot. This is not your problem. But there was it for me. I mean, there are two of us here that weren't here a year ago. Commissioner Fish had just gone on board. But I had a standing policy from the moment I became a commissioner that I insisted on a briefing on each of these, and I got that. And that stopped 1 year ago. That's no longer good enough for me. I think I want the entire council to be hearing what I hear.
Yeah.
Commissioner Fritz and then Commissioner Fish, your thoughts?
I appreciate those concerns and concur with your request. I like both. I think I'm always wanting to get briefings on things ahead of time so that I can start thinking about it before it comes up in council and think of maybe more questions. I'm also interested in hearing when this comes back, what did we do in response to this? In addition to the claim, what training, what was determined, was it determined that the officer needed more training? Are there systematic things? Last week we had a discussion of the use of force report and how if there isn't an injury, we don't count some of the force that we use. What are the bigger policy implications that a case like this can help illustrate for me as and to provide guidance both to the commissioner in charge of police and also to the Human Rights Commission and the Community and Police Relations? How can we use this as a way to make things better?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to just second what Randy has proposed, and I'd like to perhaps, Randy, be part of a discussion off that we have between meetings with the city attorney, because one of the this has come up actually through the back door and a couple other things we've addressed. Right. And what has struck me is that we walk a very fine line coming out of a mediation, which is a process which is off the record with inadmissible information, coming to us before it's settled with a trial pending. We walk a fine line because some of the things that we could discuss here in a public setting could constitute admissions or other kinds of things which could be detrimental to a legal case, and yet we have an obligation to oversight and ensure accountability. And so finding, and that actually came up, if you recall, a few weeks ago when Commissioner Saltzman had an exchange with Nelson Abiel that got pretty close to something which really would not, it was not fair because there quote, had been no negotiations, but to even ask a party to disclose things that were confidential, assuming they had occurred. So whatever background I have on this that could be helpful to the discussions, I concur completely with what you're suggesting. And I think part of it is an education process for all of us about, you know, where the lines are pre-settlement so that we don't put the city at a disadvantage.
And one of the advantages I have is that I'm not encumbered by the legal knowledge that you have.
Oh, I'm not even. And, I'm recovering.
And I always respect and appreciate when you interject those kinds of concerns. But I'm going to give an example here that is rather graphic that was a public settlement that was read here, so I'm not revealing anything that didn't happen here. It was in the Oregonian newspaper, and it was actually the last briefing I received by the police chief, and it was about a young woman who had been pulled over on the Hawthorne Bridge by an officer. The officer approached her, said, "You were speeding, you need to slow down." He said, "I'm not going to give you a ticket this time." He let her go. As she left, she reached out the window and gave him the universal middle finger sign. He pursued her, pulled her over in front of the veritable quandary. Again, I'm repeating to you what we read and discussed here at council. Told her to get out of the car. She, and this was witnessed by people in the veritable quandary. She refused to get out of the car. He reached in, grabbed her by the arm, and in attempting to extract her from the car, broke her arm. We saw pictures of her with a black eye. And we settled for close to $100,000. In my private meeting with the police chief, I said, "This is an outrageous incident. Don't worry about me voting for this settlement. I'll trip over myself to vote yes for this." What was the consequence to the officer? Nothing. And that led to a terse exchange with the police chief and myself. I read the facts of this case, and I'm going to read for those watching by TV just a short thing that I'm reading here. Background analysis: the ordinance will settle a federal lawsuit brought by Randall Cooley alleging excess force, unlawful detention, and violation of his civil rights during an encounter with a Portland police officer on September 23, 2006. The officer's and Mr. Cooley's accounts of the details surrounding the incident are markedly different. During the incident, Mr. Cooley suffered a fractured wrist. The city faced potential punitive damages, and attorney fees had plenty prevailed at trial.
The parties reached a mediated settlement shortly after the June trial, before the June trial date. The settlement is in the amount of $78,750. That it may be unfair of me, but I infer some things of the facts of that case from that settlement. And they aren't pleasant inferences with respect to the culpability of the officer and or the police bureau. I think most people that know me know I defer to defending the police bureau and its officers and going to the mat to get them what they need. I also do not believe that people who have a lot of authority have the right to abuse that authority. And I'm not suggesting that occurred in this case. I don't know if it did or not. But you came today to make a presentation performing your job, and it appears at least two of us weren't even offered a briefing on this. I've drawn the line on that. I find that arrogant on the part of the police bureau, not you, on the part of the police bureau. And from this point on, I think that it's irrational. In fact, I would think the public would be watching this shocked to know what I don't know when I'm being asked to make this kind of a vote, not just about the amount of money, but what happened to this individual, what happened to proper processes and procedures in the police bureau as a result of this incident. My experience is, from the incident on the Hawthorne Bridge, nothing happened. That's unacceptable to me. And I get that I was in kind of a politically standoff position with the police bureau for a while. That grace period's over. I'm going to return back to my prior position, which was what got me in hot water with the chief, asking these kinds of questions and demanding and insisting on answers. And I think the mayor hopefully agrees with me on that, and we can establish a policy that we don't just get briefed privately so the public doesn't hear our dirty laundry or see it. But that's fine to do what Commissioner Fritz wants. I'd like that as well. But I want it repeated here at council. I want the people that are going to get the settlement to have the opportunity to say whatever they want to say, which doesn't at all mean to me I won't vote for the settlement. I most likely would agree to at least whatever it is that has been agreed to. That's not that point. My bigger point is, are we managing our police force properly? And if there are problems, what are we as a council doing about it? Sorry to take so much time.
No, I appreciate it. I think it's an important conversation. So to make sure I'll say this out loud, and Commissioner, correct me and others, individual briefings will be offered between now and next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, we will have the appropriate, and this is the part we need your help, police personnel present will offer an opportunity for the proposed claim.
I want whoever is the proper person to fully explain the entire investigation of this incident.
Okay.
And what they determined. I also would like to know if there was any culpability on the part of the officer. I understand personnel rules, but I want to know if there was any accountability, changes in procedures, what happened as a result of this incident. Because it's clear to me from reading this, I've read by 7 years on the council, dozens and dozens of these. And when you read ones like this, something smells. And so I want to know that
something happened.
Are you
interested in you're interested in the investigator of this particular claim, but then you want to make sure we go beyond that any policy issues that arise from this specific instance, you want the appropriate police policy person there, here.
And if discipline resulted out of this incident.
Okay.
I don't need to know what it was, but okay. I think it's fair to know if there was a disciplinary process.
Okay. Anything else?
And I would really, I don't mean to make this an exhaustive list, but I would like to have some assurance from the police commissioner that as these kinds of incidents come up, he follows up personally to see if there's some systemic issue within the police bureau that needs correcting to prevent this kind of thing from happening. If, in fact, this is one of those incidents, again, I'm going back to the Hawthorne Bridge incident, that there was no such follow-up on. In fact, almost what I would say was an inexcusable dismissing of what happened.
So the investigator, someone that has knowledge and can report the investigation of each particular incident. In this case, we have one before us.
I'd like to be able to have us in advance have the interviews of the suspect, what the suspect alleged. This says here there were different views. I want to read those for myself and see what was different.
In addition to the people knowledgeable or that partook in the investigation of this specific incident, you want to know from policy level, management level people, whether there are policy or operational issues that concerns that arise out of this.
Yes.
And what the solutions there are, and
yes,
that should include that it should include the police commissioner.
And the best answer for me, because I know the police bureau will get this tape and listen to this, the best answer for me is we don't need a new policy. We have policies to cover people who overreact. We took corrective action with this officer, and it was severe. That would be the best answer.
So
that should be the answer.
Okay. You don't assume that new policy is needed, but
when I had the Bureau of Development Services and we found that employees were buying houses improperly on duty, their defense was there's no rule against it. And I reminded them we also don't have a rule against stealing money from a bank on duty. You should know that that's against the rules.
And then on the claimant side, either a representative of the claimant or the claimant itself provided an opportunity if they want.
If they want. Solely up to them.
So you're tasked with making sure that this is conveyed back and that you check in with the council offices that this is unfolding in the way that meets and exceeds their expectations.
Will do.
Okay. For today, if it's okay with council, I'm going to set this over till next Wednesday.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Good. All right. 1066 is set
Thank
over
you.
Until next Wednesday. All right, that gets us to first reading of a non-emergency ordinance, council calendar item 1067.
Authorize revenue bonds for renovations and improvements to PGE Park.
Mr. Johansson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, Eric Johansson, the City Debt Manager. At your meeting last Thursday, you approved a resolution authorizing the financial terms and conditions under which renovations and improvements would be made to PGE Park. As part of that resolution, the city agreed to provide $11.2 million in project funding from the Spectator Fund revenues and resources. The ordinance before you today authorizes the limited tax revenue bonds that will fund the $11.2 million of Spectator Fund contributions to the project. The bonds will be repaid from Spectator revenues from PGE Park and the Rose Quarter and will be additionally secured by the full faith and credit of the city. Approval of this non-emergency ordinance at next week's council meeting will allow the city to stay on track to meet the October 1st date by which project funding is to be secured. We plan to sell the bonds in mid-September and close prior to October 1st. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Discussion from council for Mr. Johansson.
I just have two quick questions, Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
First is, do we have a updated snapshot of what we think those bonds will look like?
Right now, we're still working under the structure that we've been talking about for the last several months, which looks like a zero coupon structure. Is that sort of the question?
Yeah.
We're continuing to consider that the where we are right now. However, we're working with our bankers and advisors on other structures that we hope will reduce the cost of that financing, reduce the need for zero coupon indebtedness. But at this point, we're not at the point of being able to say that particular structure will work. So we're continuing to look at the various options.
And my second question is, in the ordinance, it talks about the source of repayment of the bonds is expected to be the revenues and resources of the city's Spectator Facility Fund.
Correct.
And we've had a thorough discussion of that. But correct me if I'm wrong, but typically when the city issues debt of any kind, ultimately it's backed up by our full faith and credit. So that it is not infrequently there is the theoretical chance that if all the safety valves broke, there'd be some risk of exposure to the city, correct?
That's correct. Although not all debt is backed by the full faith and credit.
Some
water revenues, sewer revenues,
yeah.
Right. But this particular financing, yes.
And the reason we often do that is that we have an excellent credit rating. And so having that full faith and credit gives us an extra margin of safety on our debt.
Correct. It certainly improves the borrowing cost. In some cases, it simply makes a financing which otherwise wouldn't be marketable.
So I guess my question to you then is, for anyone who may be concerned that the Spectator Facility Fund, under some of the remotest contingencies that have been aired, can't cover these,
what do you see as the likelihood ever of the general fund being required to contribute to the bond repayment, refinancing?
We're taking great care in how we structure this upcoming issue to minimize that possibility. One of the things that we do is we don't bond against all of the projected revenues of the fund. We apply a coverage factor, which allows us to, you know, if revenues come in less in a particular year than we anticipate, we've got some cushion there. So the bonds will be structured not to use all of the projected revenues in any given year. That gives us one level of cushion. We have reserves in the fund that, in the worst case, could also be used to pay debt service, hopefully on a temporary basis until activities recover. So we've got a number of different places that we could go before we'd have to tap into general fund resources. But the intent is to structure the deal so that we don't push that particular issue.
And I think Ken Russ made clear recently that in 2000, I think it was 16, the Rose Quarter bonds are retired, in which right. case there are substantial funds available within the Spectator Facility Fund that we don't currently enjoy, correct?
Correct. And the structuring of this upcoming issue takes that into account. So that doesn't provide, say, an additional cushion after 2017, because we'll be bonding against those revenues that will become available following the repayment of the Rose Quarter debt.
And is it fair to say that the a worst-case scenario, if you want to just start thinking about a parade of horribles, would be that in 2025, if the Trailblazers were now the Seattle Blazers, we'd have potentially some shortfall if we weren't able to find a replacement tenant for the Rose Garden and we didn't have other sources to fill the gap.
Correct. I think that's the scenario that would be most concerning. At that point, we would also own the facility, potentially could sell the facility, potentially.
We have a hell of a collateral at that point.
We would, yeah. I mean, we hope we never get to that point, but that would be one
source. But at least we're acknowledging that in 16 years under that scenario, the worst case scenario, Trailblazers leave, and then we have other issues. There could theoretically be an issue. Otherwise, we're using prudent assumptions to back up our financing here.
I think so, yes.
Thank you.
I have a quick question.
Mr. Fritz.
I remember in the 1995 Green Spaces Bond measure, citizens were encouraged to go out and buy the bonds, not only for investment, but because we believed in the bond measure. So I've heard from soccer fans. Are these going to be on sale to the general public? Will citizens be able to buy soccer PGE Park bond?
They should be, yeah. The bonds will be underwritten by both Citigroup and Bank of America. If people are interested in purchasing those bonds and happen to have a relationship with those firms, they should talk to their broker, and those bonds will then become available sometime in the middle of September. If they don't have a relationship with them, typically a firm can get access to those bonds through the underwriters that we'll be hiring. Citigroup and Bank of America.
Isn't the United States government own Citibank right now?
yes, we all do.
Do we all have a relationship with that?
I guess we're all buying bonds.
Would we get some notice if Commissioner Fritz or some entity that she controls becomes an acquirer of these bonds?
I'll have to look at that one.
So I have a serious follow-up question, Commissioner Fritz.
Sorry.
Fish, rather. And that is, are they going to be sold in any particular denominations? Do you have to have a huge chunk of change in order to be able to buy any?
Yes. Zero coupon bonds have a maturity value in $5,000 denominations, but you purchase those at quite a discount from their face value. So in theory, they should be available for a cost of less than $5,000 and then the increments thereof. Current interest bonds that pay interest every 6 months, are in $5,000 denominations beginning at $5,000.
Thank you.
All right, this moves to, is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on council calendar item non-emergency ordinance 1067?
We had a Barry Joe Stoll signed up.
Mr. Stoll, we need to, we normally don't have someone repeatedly testify during the course of the afternoon on a variety of different topics.
Uh-huh.
So is this germane to the issue of selling bonds?
It has to do with welfare for the rich.
Okay. Go ahead and make your comments. But again, go ahead.
All right. In my own defense, Mr. Mayor, I was at the other place where you showed up this morning at 8:30. So this is what I do. I'm a social justice activist. And one of my comments that I made then was, there's quite an effort to silence me. And that's what I want to talk about.
There's no effort to silence you, but repeated signing up on a variety of different topics I need you to hone your testimony to the issue before you write this moment, which is the sale of bonds for the renovation of PG Park.
Right. Now, Commissioner Fritz has done some volunteer work at Sisters of the Road Cafe, and at one point it used to cost a dollar if you bought your meal there with food stamps, and it cost $1.25 if you bought your meal with cash. And that's because at the time the food stamp program reimbursed the people $1.25 for participating in the food stamp program, meaning that if you went to Fred Meyer and you bought $100 worth of groceries with food stamps, they not only made the profit that $100 of groceries would make to anybody, but in addition to that, they got an additional $25 for participating in the program. So on what one level might appear to be a benefit to poor people that need food stamp assistance, it's quite a substantial benefit to the moneyed interests that own the store. Now, I myself was an employee of PGE Park Housekeeping a year ago, starting July 31st. I had some incidences there with an employee that repeatedly threatened me at the workplace. He threatened me on the max and attempted to said he was going to kill me. I don't believe that would have happened had PGE Park remained as Portland city-owned Civic Stadium. And I'm really concerned, as was mentioned with one of the other topics by somebody else, about the privatization of public property and public spaces. And so I want you to consider when you go through these processes that there are really thousands of people that are homeless in Portland. And we did have an opportunity on an earlier matter to address that there is a housing crisis and there's efforts to address that. I just want this council to be aware of and concerned that we don't engage in welfare for the rich.
Thank you, Mr. Stahl. All right, this moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance 1070?
I have 1068 still on the calendar.
Yeah, we're going to do that last.
Okay, sorry. 1070, authorized contract with Brown and Caldwell for professional engineering services for the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Solids Lagoon Reconstruction Update Project Number E09184.
Thank you for your patience.
Yes, Mr. Mayor and the Council, my name is Scott Gibson. I'm in the engineering group at the Bureau of Environmental Services, and I'm here to talk to you about this ordinance to authorize design services for rehabilitation of the Triangle Lagoons at the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. This ordinance will authorize a contract with Brown and Caldwell. They won the contract through a competitive process in 2000, and we completed the first phase of the project. They carried the design on following phases through 90%, and at that time we were able to put the improvements off for a number of years to save money. We're reinitiating that process now in order to get the rehabilitations necessary on the lagoons prior to the renewal of our permit for the solid lagoons.
So MWESB performance?
MWESB participation on the contract in whole was at 30%. That included the earlier work. The follow-on work, most of this money is for support of construction. The design elements are at 90%, so that work has a reduced opportunity for MWESB participation, but there still is 10% of the total fee in this contract going to the minority firms.
Discussions from council? Questions? Commissioner Fritz?
When will you know what the final cost of this project will be?
For construction, including construction? I think we would know relatively soon when they start freshening the documents and redoing the estimates.
So we could expect to see a series of further contracts as things get refined. Because the total cost is supposed to be $17 million, is that right?
Something right. Like that? I think what we anticipate is this contract to complete the design. This includes the engineer's support during construction. And then we will come to you with authorization for the construction contract packages.
And do you have funding for the ongoing construction at this point?
We do. We're working on that right now internally, but the resources are available. We're making budgeting decisions as far as timing right now.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on 1070? Anyone wishes to testify on 1070? All right, 1070 moves to second reading next week. Can you please read the, can you please call the roll, read the title and call the roll for second reading, which shows up as council calendar item 1074.
Authorized intergovernmental agreement with Metro for ongoing parks and recreation management of Metro Acquired.